You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Space Floor NBA Podcast. My name is Connor Gielen.
And I'm Connor Flannery.
This is our 107th official episode.
Today, we're here with our partner over 94 feet hoops again, Blake Buchanan, who played D1 basketball at George Mason and Wake Forest.
Glad to be back. We got another podcast, another 7-foot guest.
And of course, then our guest, Dallas Walton, who played his undergraduate at Colorado, played his graduate at Wake Forest, like Blake, and now is playing overseas in Romania. So thanks for coming on, Dallas.
Man, what's going on, you guys? Appreciate you guys having me on. Shout out to Blake. That's my connection here for balling. I didn't get to ball in the hoop with him, but yeah, just miss each other. But great guy, man. And love what y'all are doing here. So I was actually born in Denver, and my family moved to Arvada, flip flop between Arvada and Colorado Springs, and just due to my dad's work for the most part. Ended up growing up and going to high school out in Arvada. Went to Ralston Valley for 2 years. Bunch of stuff went down over there. Just was not comfortable in that situation. And then ended up transferring to the rival school across town, Arvada West. Had some injuries, but was able to make some shape for myself as far as my senior year goes with hoops. And the rest is history. Got a scholarship to CU, redshirted my first year, got injured my junior year, had a great senior season, made it to March Madness, completed my college career at Wake Forest, and it was a successful year. Didn't achieve all our goals of making like the NCAA tournament like we had hoped, but made the NIT, made a great run, and I mean brought back a pulse to Wake Forest basketball that had been missing for a little while.
Did you ever have hopes of playing out of state, or was it kind of always the dream to go play at Colorado?
Oh, it was the dream to play at Colorado. I mean, I grew up in Colorado, big time university. It was in the Pac-12. I grew up going to all the football games. My dad and my uncles, they're all alumni there. My dad ran, or my uncle ran track at CU as well. And so they were all kind of, I don't want to say groomed, but they're grooming me to kind of go to CU. They were actually my first like Power Five offer. I was just like, yeah, no brainer. This is where I wanted to be the whole time. For better or worse, you know, it worked out. It worked out in many ways. But yeah, ended up going to Colorado and having the experience of a lifetime there.
In those 5 years that you were there, like what specifically stood out as like one, like I've made it. Like I'm here. I'm a Division I athlete. I'm playing in front of thousands. And then also, what is just kind of like a memory that you won't forget from there? From that experience?
Oh yeah, I mean, so like coming out of high school, I tore my ACL twice, back to back, within amount of 8-9 months. And so my junior year going into my senior year of high school, all my offers gone. And it was like I was on a good club team, you know, Chauncey Billups Elite. We were competitive. We won a national championship my 8th grade year. Had a bunch of offers going to my freshman, sophomore year. And then, you know, once you tear your ACL twice, back to back, things change drastically. And so I had to have a great senior season in order to get an offer at all. And so, you know, I had a good enough senior season to have like some mid-major offers and places, you know, like in the Ivy League as well. But in my heart, I knew I was like, I was a Power Five player, but I just didn't have the opportunity to really play enough basketball to show that or prove that. And so towards the end of my senior season, thankfully I had a connection with the team doctor at CU who did my surgery on my knees and gave them the green light that I was okay to and good to go. And that's what was able to give me my scholarship offer to go to CU. And so coming from a Colorado high school, growing up in Colorado and then going to the University of Colorado, you know, you have all your high school friends, all your friends and family are there. And so for me, like just being close to home, you know, you're not, I wouldn't say like you're that guy, but it's like, you know, everybody kind of knows you, you know, you have a great support system around you. And even so, like, even though I redshirted my freshman year, due to my injuries from high school, I still was getting that same support. Like people were like, you know, yeah, your time's coming, just stay patient. And it really kind of helped me stay grounded throughout the whole the whole college process. Cause you know, some people, they may get redshirted their freshman year and be like, you know what? Nah, fuck this. I'm out of here. I'm transferring. Whereas like, you know, like me, I'm close to home. I'm like, I'm where I want to be. I'm going to just stay patient. And so, yeah, redshirted, had a great freshman year, came out, boom, got most improved player on the team. We didn't make the tournament that year, but it was still a great year for our team and me as well individually. And then fast forward to my junior year, tore my ACL again. And then thankfully, like I said before, I had all my support system there, coaches, doctors, friends, family, all telling me like, you know what, you came back from this twice already, you can do it again. So
is it the same ACL every time?
No. So in high school, yeah, it was crazy.
Man, like, got no ACLs.
I'm like, I got them robo knees, man. It's crazy.
Got negative ACLs.
Yeah, it was twice in high school, my left knee. And then then my right knee in college, it was a grind, man. It was crazy. Like after that third one, it's like, man, like what am I even doing? Is am I getting like these external signs from some higher power saying I shouldn't be doing this anymore? But thankfully, you know, I had everything I needed to come back from that stronger than I had going into it. And so that's exactly what I was able to do and play my senior year and my fifth year. And I would say like, obviously like my most special time probably at CU was when my final year there was when we were able to make the March Madness tournament, had a great record. Was ranked basically the whole year. I mean, it's like, you know, that's what you work for when you come to college to play basketball. It's like, you know, you want to get to the big dance. And we could have done it the year before, but COVID happened. We were part of the teams that were going to get selected, but you know, one thing had led to another and no tournament. And so when you finally get to go, even though it was in a bubble, you're like, you know what, I've done it. Like this is what I've came here to do. And then obviously you want to advance as far as you can in the tournament. We only got to round two, I think. Yeah, round two.
Did get past Georgetown.
I'll take it.
So I want to stop you right there right now. So I go to Georgetown. I'm on campus right now. I'm in my college dorm. I'm Georgetown.
I'm sorry, man.
Terrible. So that was actually, so I'm a sophomore. So that happened like 6 months before I arrived on campus or something like that. But you guys, I've heard stories. You guys squashed every hope that we had, because we were terrible that year. We've been terrible since. We've been terrible, but we were awful that year. I'm sure you know all this. And then we were the lowest seed or the second lowest seed in the Big East tournament. We won 4 games in 4 days or 5 games in 5 days on our Kemba Walker shit. So we get an auto bid. Even if we had won like 3 of the games and lost in the finals, we're not getting in the tournament. It was strictly because we got the automatic bid that we got into March Madness. 12 seed going up against you as a 5 seed. I wasn't on campus. I heard stories when we won the Big East tournament. People were screaming in the streets. Like it was like insanity. Like campus was falling apart. And then we have our hopes up. And then you come in and blow us out 96-73 on national television.
And I remember this. I remember this crazy because I had a friend who I played club ball with in Colorado. His name was Trudier Bile. He played on Georgetown that year too. And he's telling me about like this great run that you guys had, and everybody in the tournament, everybody in the bracket selection was picking that this was going to be the upset of the tournament.
5-12.
Yeah, the 12-5, this is the one. Everybody going to choose this one. And I remember like we caught fire in a way. We didn't even know we were capable of that game. No, but like we hit like, I think like we hit so, it was like,
you,
I don't know,
you hit an insane amount of threes. I don't know.
I think everybody on our roster hit three. And it was funny. It was funny just because it was just like, it to us, we kind of took that personally in terms of just like everybody was choosing us to lose that game. And we also came from like the Pac-12 tournament where another auto bid team beat us in the championship, Oregon State. And they had no business being in the tournament. tournament either, but because they won the Pac-12 tournament, they got their automatic bid as well.
And they kept going, right? Didn't they get
to? They had a great run.
Could have been you, Connor.
Yeah. could have been Dorsey.
Dude, the way our roster is looking right now, I might have to suit up. All right. But you guys shot in that game against us. We shot basically the same amount of threes. You guys attempted 25 threes. We attempted 24. We made 8 of them. You made 16 threes. You guys shot 64% from three and just tore us apart. And like all of them, like so many were assisted as well.
It was just like beautiful game. They were all great shots. And it was just like the light was just hidden in that gym that we were playing in a historic gym, Butler's historic gym. The light was, it was like a middle of the day game. The light was hitting just right. Sun beam shining through. We were just streaking that thing. It was like
crazy. Dallas, did you hit any threes that game? Because I got in on the action too. But I know I did some reading on you. I saw you're at Wake Forest. You're like an 85% free throw shooter, and you're near 40% 3-point shooter. So I know you can stroke a little bit.
Oh yeah, it's definitely part of my game. It's something I work on a lot. Yeah, I'm a shooter on the low. I just don't take that many of them, even though I can.
Deshaun Schwartz, who is also supposed to be on the pod, he had 18. Like he was tearing us up. You had 9 as well, and then Jabari Walker had 24 in that game.
Yeah, that was the debut of Jabari Walker, who ended up getting drafted this year, 55th in the draft.
Wow.
That was like his freshman. It was his freshman year. He hadn't played at all, really, too much the whole year. And then that was like his game where he just was going crazy from three. And I remember vividly, like I was like, oh my gosh, like that was kind of like the game that kind of decided like, all right, it's time for the young guys to kind of take over this program. And that's when you saw like a lot of the older guys transfer out of Colorado. Sean went to George Mason. Dry went back to Tulsa. I went to Wake Forest because it was like at that point, it was like, all right, like, this is the young guys' team now. Jabari is like it's kind of like, you know, like the cycle. The cycle is continuing at that point. And yeah, Jabari had a great year last year and got drafted this year. So
Nate Tomlinson was one of your assistants at Colorado. He was my assistant this past year at George Mason. That's my guy. But he was also a player at Colorado. And I was with Coach Childress, Randolph Childress at Wake Forest. He played at Wake Forest, obviously a Wake Forest legend. Is there anything like particularly fascinating to you about being coached by someone who wore the same jersey as you are?
Oh, yeah. It adds a whole new element of passion and pride whenever you're getting coached by somebody who put their blood, sweat, and tears in that same uniform, on that same floor, in front of the same people. And I remember growing up watching Nate play, leading the Buffs. He's a point guard for him.
That first Pac-12 championship, or Pac-10 at the time.
Yeah, exactly. He was a part of that. And people love to forget. And, you know, I mean, our Buff fans, I love them, but I also hate them at the same time because, like, as much as they'll praise you, they'll rip you a new one just like that if you start playing bad or doing something that they don't like, which, I mean, that's any fan base for sure, but, like, Buff fans especially. I remember like watching Nate in the crowd or watching Nate in the crowd and everybody, you know, loved to critique him, but that dude was a winner. He brings a certain passion that a lot of teams in college basketball sometimes are missing because they don't understand the history of their program. Is he probably brought that to George Mason too?
Oh,
he
has a certain 1,000%.
Him and Kim just be feeding off of each other and they just like Kim, because Kim's a passionate guy too.
Kim could take this AirPod case and tell me how it's changed my life and how I need to value it with the most utmost respect of anything. And I would believe him.
Exactly, right?
I will follow that man to the ends of the earth.
I was going
to
say, like, Kim would always be like, he would always tell us, like, pro 40 game, he's like, power, hunger. He's like, you know, he gets that face. He's like.
Hey, I was about to say, I wish we could get this one on YouTube because that was the perfect face for it. It was like I was back in the locker room.
Yeah.
Humility.
Humility. He gets his face and it's just like, oh my god.
No, he's locked in though, man. He's awesome. But him and Nate already have that just intense passion that's like you're not gonna find elsewhere. So it's almost like giving them a superpower, like as it pertains to Nate, giving him a superpower when you have that coaching at your alma mater.
I feel like that also probably applies to a lesser extent just with anyone who has actually been a higher level basketball player, right? Even if it's not for the same program, because there is something to be said about if you're being coached by a guy that, you know, never played past high school, if that, especially if they're older, it's hard to picture them understanding what you're going through because they weren't really there, as opposed to younger coaches. I had a coach that played at Providence, and their words seem to have more authority because they've done what like we're trying to do.
They also get it. Like they understand that you're young. You are like, they're like after a hard practice, it's like you don't want to just go home and do some homework. Let me go out and get a beer or something. Or, let me unwind or something. Like they just get it, you know.
Yeah,
they get it. They like some coaches don't understand. They think like their players are robots or something.
Our head basketball coach is Patrick Ewing.
He gets it.
Yeah, he gets it, and he's the best Toya alumni, as far as basketball goes ever. So that's some good authority. Although, you know, like we kind of suck and he's not a great coach.
It would help to win games.
Yeah. There's multiple factors involved, but that's definitely one of them. The relatability.
Yeah. Although he seems like he's like the nicest dude. I like ran into him a few times. Like he's really dope.
I wanted to ask Dallas about your grad year at Wake Forest. We kind of covered your years at Colorado, but, you kind of got granted that you're at Wake Forest due to a couple of like rule changes. It's sort of an unusual situation, and that you both had the added eligibility because of COVID and changing transfer rules in the NCAA. So I want you to tell us a little bit about your experience of switching schools and whether you think that was those are positive rule changes, whether you're in support of them or some of the downsides.
So there's a lot to unpack with that one, because it's like, I mean, first of all, when I had to make that decision, I was doing like this whole Zoom recruiting because you couldn't do any visits. And, you know, you put your name in the portal just like a bunch of other kids did because they were like, oh, we got this extra year and there's no transfer penalty. Let's put our names in the portal. Let's see if we can go somewhere else and do some numbers and try and make that pro jump. And so, yeah, I put my name in the portal and, you know, you get calls from all these coaches and Zoom meetings on Zoom tours, virtual tours. And I'm just sitting in my one bedroom apartment in Boulder looking at all of this like, wow, like that looks really nice. I wonder how that would be. And like part of it was I wanted to get out of the state to experience living by myself and being able to kind of like handle being in a foreign air, because I've been at home the whole time. I've been at high school, college, my whole life I've been in Colorado. So I was like, you know what, I need to expand my horizons, get out and see if I can handle being alone and handling a new situation with a new team. Wake Forest reached out to me, Steve Forbes. He was one of the first people to call me. The presentation, like I just understood like straight from the jump that this guy was not a guy who like messed around at all. He was very straight to the point, straightforward about what I would do, what I would bring to the team, what my role would be. I asked like a lot of my inner circle, a lot of my AAU coaches had coached with some of his assistant coaches there. And so there was a lot of coaching connections and different people that I could go to that would validate everything that he was saying. Cause it's hard to like trust these coaches sometimes. That's what I'm saying. I tell all these young kids coming into college basketball, like, you know, don't believe everything that you're getting fed, because, you know, a lot of these coaches love to feed you all that sweet stuff and make it sound good. But once you get there, it's a whole different situation. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, you always gotta validate everything that they were saying to me was getting validated through my coach. So yeah, I just took a leap of faith because I had no idea anything about Wake Forest. I was like, you know, I knew the players that went there. I knew where it was. But other than that, I had no idea. So I'm going to Wake Forest. I'm gonna see how it is. I get out there. And I'm sorry to say, but it was nothing like the virtual tour. The campus was a lot smaller.
That's true. Yeah,
the virtual tour makes it look like this. It makes it look like this is huge campus. The facilities, the angles were taken just right. So like it looks like the weight room expands for forever. Like the practice court, it looks like there's multiple practice courts. I get there, there's only one practice court for the men and the women. Once I saw the locker room, I was like, and they just updated it this year. But
I was just there last week, bro. It's insane now.
It's nice now. But on the virtual tour versus in person, that locker room was like, it was like bottom tier.
Man got catfished by weight room.
I got catfished bad. I was like, yo, this locker room is like something you would expect if you went to like a small D2.
Wow.
They're like probably like they only did one person.
You couldn't fit in those. Because Wake was pitching the CP3 locker room and telling us we were going to have it when I was coming into school in 2018. And then, like, stuff got backed up. COVID happened. So Dallas was in the same locker room that I was in. And they just – literally last week I was at the grand opening of the CP3 family clubhouse, I guess, whatever they're calling it. It's Dallas. It's different now. It's like – they have four couches with flat-screen TVs. And I was like, bro, we used to sleep on the carpet floor for boot camp.
Oh, man. I'm telling you, that locker room, like, you know what I'm talking about. Like, you spend a lot of time in the locker room, and I'm like, people would take the cushions of the couches and put them on the floor in front of your locker. If you wanted to, like, lie down somewhere, you had to steal the cushion off the couch, put it on the ground, and then lay on the ground.
That's when, bro, literally, we were there last week, and Mike Muse goes, man, last year in the locker room, like my entire experience, you guys would lie down with the cushions and I'd have to step over you guys.
Yes. Like,
glad that's done.
Yes, we had TVs in there that would never be used. Like, I think, like, and then there was like this stereo system from, I think, like maybe mid-2000s. I don't know when nobody knew how to work it. It was so ancient. But when I got there and I was like, what is this?
Wait, why are we guys sleeping on the floor so much?
Because, like, bro, being a D1 athlete, you get tired.
You know, I have to sleep
or eat in between class and practice. And so sometimes you just got to go to the locker room and get some snacks and take a nap on the floor.
But not in your dorm.
Dallas, you live, what, like 10 minutes away from campus last year? I think he was at the edge.
Yeah, I'm used to everyone living on campus. We have to live on campus first 3 years here.
Like, you would have class in the morning and, you know, you get there probably like 8 a.m. You don't have practice till like 1:30. You're like, I'm gonna take a nap or something like that before practice. You lay down. If you wanted to take a nap, you just put that cushion on the floor or put two couches, like drag two couches and try and like put them together because they're all single couches.
Nothing could fit you.
Nothing. And it was like in the basement of the practice facility. So, like, to go up to practice, you had to walk up three flights of stairs. But, I mean, obviously, I had a great time there. Once you adjusted to, like, kind of, like, the difference between the virtual tour and what it actually was, you know, it's actually a really good place and a really nice campus. And, it was crazy, you know. It was a little different, like, that whole recruiting process. And then from there, just with the COVID year, it also meant that a lot of these seniors – decided to go pro this year. So a lot of these roster spots overseas in the States, all over the world are filling up and have filled up quicker than any other year. Cause it's like, you know, the market is 10 times larger.
So shifting over to your time in Romania now, give us a little bit of the experience of getting recruited then to play over there and signing a contract. And then you just talked about quality of life at Wake Forest. Tell us about, like, what are the locker rooms like in Romania? How's the living situation there?
Man, my one piece of advice to all these guys in college right now is enjoy the luxuries and the lifestyles that you guys are living, because overseas it is all different. Romania, this team that I'm on right now, CBU, CSU, CBU, they were my first professional offer. And actually, come the end of August, they were my only professional offer. At this point, it's like, you want to get your foot in the door because it's good to play somewhere, anywhere, and do your thing rather than sitting at home and not having a job and then hoping that next year the market is open. Because it's like teams like guys that are playing basketball in a professional way rather than not playing at all. And so I hear about this Romania deal and I know it's good basketball in this league, but, you know, I know nothing about Romania. I'm like, I don't know if I want to go to Romania. I'm like, shoot, all I know, what do I know about Romania? Transylvania, Dracula lives here. What? Yeah. I'm like, I don't know how I feel about it. And then I get off the plane, you know, like you get off the plane at Cluj and there's no airport really. You get off the plane and they give like a little stairway down to a bus and the bus takes you to the baggage claim. And from there, you have to watch your bags because people will take your bag. You walk outside and then you're like, oh my God, like I'm out here right now. I mean, it's on the edge of the city. So the airport, like once you get out of the airport, you're like, oh my God, it looks like I'm in a movie of like Borat or something. But then once you get into the city, then it becomes more of like a Italian style. Like the buildings are really, really large, really nice. The streets are really packed with people, active city, really. I mean, it's like, and then you realize like it's, I wouldn't say it's like America, but it has everything that America has. It's just called something different out here. I got to CBU, the city's large. They had like a festival going on in the park. But I mean, like the locker room, like it's probably the size of my living room right now that I'm in right now. And it's like, maybe 9 meters by 9 meters.
Like, well, it's like using meters. Transition to meters.
Yeah, exactly. I'm already euroed out over here. But quick, it's a
quick,
small
quick power ranking of the locker rooms. CU Wake Forest Romania.
Oh yeah. So yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. That's exactly it. CU Wake Forest Romania. Like you're sharing, and then I get to the stadium. Like you find out that you're sharing this stadium with like multiple other club teams. Like handball is really big out here, so your wow. Stadium it has the nets designed for like handball, but you know it also does have basketball hoops that it rolls out for you to play hoops on with hoops too. The traveling, oh my God! In college, you're flying everywhere. You're flying planes, you're flying commercial, whether you're flying commercial, private. You're flying, or if it's close enough, you're gonna bust, and it's a comfortable bust. Whereas out here, like I just got back from Oradea, which is like we just played the top team in the league. They are 5 hours away by bus, so we drive by bus out there 5 hours. We go to this hotel, and in this hotel, there's two twin beds, probably about like this far away from each other. You share with a teammate, only one plug in there maybe. You stretch once you get off the bus, you play the game, and then you have a 5-hour trip back. And wow. I'm telling you, you gotta be like, built. You gotta have a love for the game if you come out to overseas, depending on where you go. If you're not like one of the top leagues like Spain, ACB, Italy, Pro A, I would say even Germany, Pro A. Like some of the top leagues, even where Deshaun's at, he's in EuroLeague. If you're not in EuroLeague, it can get rough. It can get rough, I'm sure, for sure. You got to adjust to teams that don't have as big of a budget as some of these college teams do in the States.
Dallas, what is the average like attendance looking like? And of the people that go, what's the response?
Oh, yeah. So the attendance, actually, these guys, so basketball is one of the top sports in the country. Mm-hmm. So they pack the house time, and they care a lot. At least here in CBU. Really, as far as great. The other city in Romania, I do not know. I know. Sometimes they may pack them out depending on who you're playing, but sometimes it may not be that many people.
In terms of the language also, like obviously English is not the first language in Romania. Do most of the coaches, your teammates speak English, or do you have to have like translators on staff? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, so usually when you're in the club, and this is how it is for most places that some of these players go. The club and all the players and the coaches speak English. Mm-hmm. I mean, me, I'm the only American on the team, so I was worried about that. But thankfully, they all speak English and they coach in English, and all of our terminologies and calls and stuff are in English as well.
What's your role like on the team? Like we talked about it a little bit earlier. How you're a 7-footer, but you can shoot a little bit from the outside. I want to know a little bit about like what does your game look like over there?
Oh yeah, so I mean, surprisingly, I'm like one of the more bigger dudes out here. So I'm more of a pick and roll defender, shot blocker, lob catcher. There's a lot of vets in this league who played in like some of the top leagues in Spain and NBA G Leaguers out here too. And so I'm actually surprised. I'm one of the more athletic dudes out here, so I catch a lot of lobs. I can shoot. So if I'm open, I'm gonna let that thing fly, even though there's not a lot of like play set for me to do that. So yeah, I'm more of like a 5'4" player out here. Kind of similar, but not exactly. Like at Wake Forest, I was on the perimeter a lot. We were running a 5-out motion at Wake Forest, whereas here, like I'm running block to block and setting screens.
You say you're the only American on the team. That's really interesting. How has that been, right? Because no one on the team really has like that same shared experience. They are presumably all from different countries as well. Maybe they're from Romania. I'd like to hear about that. And how does that shape how you guys are as a team? Like, is it harder to have like teamwork and like buying in, especially when there's probably a lot of turnover?
Being the only American on the team, I had to adjust quick, because it's like you can become an outsider really quick if you just close yourself off and don't try and immerse yourself in the cultures that you're being surrounded with. So for me, this team, for the team that I'm on, is made up of guys from Romania and guys from Spain. And those are like the two main languages outside of English that are spoken on this team. And so like, I'm like doing my best to learn Romanian and Spanish at the same time while, you know, just opening myself out there. You know, I'm hanging with the different, with the Spanish guys one day, or like I'll hang with the Romanians one day. Like they have a lot of advice because they've all been pros before. Actually, I am the only rookie on the team. And so all these guys that I'm playing with have had like 2 to 3 years of experience playing professional basketball. So it's kind of feeding off of that wisdom, because they all have wisdom to give you. And it's just a matter of whether you want it or not. And that's one thing that sometimes Americans come over here and do, is that they try and make the country that they're in like America, when really you got to adjust and you got to change to wherever you're at. You got to adapt.
That's really cool. What's an example of something that you've picked up on from a culture like?
So this is like, I mean, like even like with the restaurant. So like what's nice about our deal with our team is that they give us, that we go, we have this restaurant that we go to that gives us free meals, free lunch and free dinner every day. But the people that own the restaurant and work the restaurant, they only speak Romanian. So you got to know how to talk a little. You got to know how to order food a little bit in Romanian. And you got to be open to trying some new dishes, especially when you're on the road. You don't know what you're going to get. Like stuffed cabbage sometimes. That's a new dish I had to try. So it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
You get your key phrases like buna dimineața. That's like good morning. You're like, okay, can I have the chicken with pasta? Some poi con orez, you know. Chicken and rice. I'm like, all right.
Yeah. Give me that chicken. I've been eating so much chicken out here. It's crazy.
Free lunch, free dinner, and lots of chicken. It sounds pretty good to me.
Oh yeah, you know, it's a good deal. You gotta find ways to change up your chicken. I'll be putting like ketchup and mustard on it sometimes, or you know. It's all grilled chicken.
You're getting this advice from these older guys, and you're doing these 5-hour bus rides and learning new languages and experiencing new things. So as you're going through all of this, where do you hope that it will take you long term? Where do you see your hoop game taking you, you know, 5 years from now?
Oh yeah. So my goal is to get to the countries that I've always wanted to play in, which is like, you know, like if I'm gonna do this overseas thing, I want to experience at the highest level. Mm-hmm. So like I was mentioning, like, you know, Spain, ACB, they got Barcelona, Real Madrid over there. Valencia, you know, it's Italy, Pro A, that's another top league. I mean, yeah, even Germany and Poland, those leagues are really good too. But you want to keep on leveling up the competition, which will also level up how much you're getting paid. And then so like, you know, overseas, you know, like the goal, your career, especially as a basketball player, is not very long. And so for me, especially coming off of 3 ACLs, I want to make sure that, you know, I'm doing what I can to make the most out of my career. For me especially, it's just like, as long as I keep on leveling up, I can make more money over here overseas than I probably could have if I tried to make it in the G League in the States. Or like, yeah, but I mean, eventually, you know, my goal is to come back to the States if that's a possibility for me. But
For me, especially, like, I'm a very personable guy, and I like kind of learning new cultures and new lifestyles. I don't mind being overseas at all and making my money over here.
The whole year at Dallas, but I know him pretty well at this point, and he's definitely one of the most well-rounded people I've ever encountered. Just talking, I was like, hey, what else do you want to talk about non-basketball-wise? He's like, oh, we can talk about chess, piano, snowboarding. I'm like, dude, you're hitting all the different areas of life, man. Do you actually still snowboard?
Okay, so since I've been in college, I've not been able to snowboard. In high school, though, I was up on the mountain every weekend. I was up in Eldora. I was up there shredding, steamboat.
At 7 feet?
But oh yeah, I had the biggest board on the mountain. I was down. I would always rent it out because I was growing so much in high school that, like, I never wanted to get a board myself because I was like, I'm gonna outgrow it. So I'd always rent it out. You want to rent the board when you're at the bottom of the mountain, because once you get up there and you try and rent it, they'll charge you an arm and a leg. I was snowboarding a lot in high school, and I know once I'm done with this hoop thing, I'm gonna be back there. But
that's my same logic with skiing. I was like, yeah, I'm done now. I'll take the risk again. So I'm trying to go back out.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll definitely hit the slope, bro.
Oh yeah, Start with some greens. Start with some greens, and then we'll work our way up to some double blues.
Imagine how, like, starstruck you would be if you're a little kid, like, skiing on the bunny slope for the first time, and a 7-footer is just flying down the mountain on a snowboard.
Out the way.
I don't understand how one of your ACL injuries wasn't from that. How did he stay up?
Basketball's way more dangerous than snowboarding and skiing. You'd be surprised.
That's a quote and a half right there.
Where did you get all these different off the court passions from, though? And, like, was there anyone in particular in your life that introduced you to, well, because I've been, like, Dallas's apartment, he's got a chessboard in there. Whenever a big group over there, there's always two people playing chess. Like, he's facilitating tournaments.
Oh,
and you're talking about piano and stuff. Bro. Like, who instilled all of this in you and, like, got you to cultivate these talents?
It was my mom. Because my mom, she grew up in New York. She grew up in East Harlem. She worked on Broadway for a little while too. She just doesn't like sports. Like, plain and simple, she just doesn't. She, like, when I was in AAU, like, in high school, like, she didn't know whether I was gonna make it or not with this basketball thing. So my dad would always ask her if she could take me to my club games or my high school games, and she would take me reluctantly. But she would always be, like, knitting or, like, reading her books while I'm playing. Like, she just did not care at all. Growing up, she had me taking piano lessons for 5 years while I was doing basketball, because she's like, you're not going to be just a basketball player. You're going to do something else. So she had me doing piano lessons. She had me riding horses.
Oh, yeah. I refuse to believe you can ride a horse.
If y'all know that famous photo of Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse? That would be nothing compared to 7'1" Dallas Wallace.
His feet would touch the ground. I do not accept that is a thing. Physics do not allow
snowboarding and horse riding. Hey,
she had me doing Western style horseback riding. So I would ride bareback sometimes. I would have to learn how to put the saddle on the horse, strap that thing up, brush the horse.
Wow.
I was in it. Wow. I was out there Western cowboy riding.
Wow, he's hitting all the Colorado stereotypes right now.
I'm sure. I was gonna say the long fingers, the wingspan at least had to have helped for piano, right? Like, if it hurt your snowboarding and horse riding career, like, your piano game's got to be up there.
At a point in time, I was elite at piano, and then, like, you know, I kind of, like, drifted away from it. But it's like, you never forget. It's like riding a bike a little bit. Yeah. You know, you never forget how to do it. You just take breaks from it. You're like, all right, I want to focus. I just want to put more of my attention in something else.
I can still play the first half of Jingle Bells, because I took piano lessons when I was 6 years old. That's the only thing I got left. But
you know
the first half,
I'm telling you, right? It never leaves you.
If you had to choose one non-basketball thing where you're like, man, if it wasn't basketball, that's where I would have poured so, like, the main, like, most of my passion into. What would it be? Because there are a ton of options to choose from, clearly.
Yeah, you know, it either be between tennis or piano. Like, I love music. And I was
he introduces a new thing too. Every single time.
That's dope. The chess thing is cool too.
Oh yeah, no, I love chess. I was putting the whole team on the chess. Like I literally bought a chess board and had the clock out there. And Miles was supposed to be on this call too, but I put him on the chess. And that dude got super nice at chess. Like, I'm telling you, he was like, we were online playing online. I used to whoop his ass. But now he is like a chess. He's good. He's really good.
Wow.
Like, as far as like ratings level, he's like a 1300. And like, I would say like, I'm like maybe like a 900. And that's like good, but wow, not great.
Interesting. I remember when I was in like third to fifth grade, I randomly did a bunch of chess tournaments. In New York City, and those shits are fun. I remember I whooped all the kids' ass when it was kind of like the rookie tournament. So I was like, compared to other kids who was like, it was their first or second tournament, I was like LeBron. But going again. then I got into the bracket. It was too good, and then I that was the end of my professional chess career.
Oh yeah, no, it gets hectic once you get to somebody that like has like a strategy for you. Then you're like, okay. Yeah. I gotta get it right.
like with gambits and shit.
Yeah, yeah. Opening, oh, like different openings and stuff. Yeah, like they've been studying the game for a while. Oh no.
Yeah. I used to go down to Washington Square Park and then like you can just play with strangers like for money. It's cool.
Yeah, you gotta watch out for those hustlers though.
The Romanian airport has you on edge.
So nobody in Romania has challenged me yet, but I don't have my chessboard out here. So I gotta get right with these people.
So Dallas, usually what we end with is what's your why? Why are you have this passion for basketball? What is the motivation behind all of it? But in general, it's like, why do you work so hard and find yourself so passionate about all these other things in life too? Just really, what's your motivation behind putting the effort into things that you do?
Oh, especially given your ACLs and now like playing in Romania, right? You've had to deal with a lot of adversity. So we'd like to hear especially from you. And Olivier Sarr was the one who brought this to us in our last episode, but we're carrying it forward now.
Oh, no, I like that. I mean, and for me, my why is my family. I mean, my family now and my family for the future. I'm building a foundation, solid foundation, which will help my family, my kids, my parents live a life that they deserve and live a life that you know that they can try all the things that I tried as a kid. You know, they can be diverse and do what they want to do. They don't have to succumb to a job or do something that they aren't passionate about, you know. And I think that's important. Like for example, my grandpa, he's going through some health issues. I'm doing this for him, you know. He needs some surgeries, he needs some help. I'm out here helping my family, you know. It's like, it's all for me at the end of the day. My family's been my biggest support system. It's why I stayed home for so long, leaving high school, and it's the reason why I continue playing basketball even after the stress that I put my body through with three ACLs. For me, it's my family.
No, man, I absolutely, like, I think it's amazing what we can do when we pour our hearts into others. And that's a big reason why you're at where you're at and why you're going to continue to grow, man. So we appreciate you sharing and just having us baffled at all your incredible talents, basketball and beyond, man.
Man, I appreciate you guys having me on, man. It was a fun time. It was a fun time. Let me know next time y'all get track on here. I'll definitely hop back on.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Space Floor NBA Podcast. We hope you enjoyed. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, all under Space Floor NBA Podcast. And also follow our Instagram at Space Floor Podcast and on Twitter at Space Floor. And thank you so much. My name is Connor Gielan.
And I'm Connor Flannery.
And see you guys next time.
Peace. Thanks again, Dallas.
See you guys. Yeah.